Love that song. The great reality. And I enjoyed the other songs this morning. That one of my favorites is Face to Face with Christ My Savior. I love that song. Imagine that time when everything else is all cut away, and it's just you and Jesus standing face to face. What a moment that will be. Greet you all in the name of Christ this morning, and it's good to be with you to worship the Lord together. We were gone most of this week, and yesterday, and the day before, actually most of the day before, we were driving through an area known as the Sand Hills in Nebraska. It's an area that covers about 20,000 square miles. And viewed from space, you can see that these are sand dunes covered with grass. An old desert that's got a thin skiff of grass on the top. And I was driving, like, it's beautiful. All of God's creation is beautiful. And you're hard pressed to find a spot on earth that doesn't have its own beauty. But this is really beautiful. You can see miles from one horizon to the next. I don't know how far it is, but you can see miles and miles. And being from Missouri, you've got a few places up there toward Good Hope and places like that where you can see a long ways. But most of the time, you've got a pretty limited horizon. And it was really neat just to see that beautiful vista. But then I was thinking about it's also an extremely lonely land. It's, in fact, in one of the counties that we went through, Cherry County, it's got one of the lowest populations in the United States. It ranks with the backcountry of Alaska for population. Just nothing. Nothing but a few dots of cows way out. You can see them far in the distance. And I was thinking about that. It reminded me all of a sudden of character, of a person. I wondered what would my character look like if it was all laid out like a landscape. And that portion of Nebraska is beautiful in its emptiness and its loneliness. But it's not a place you'd want to stay. Not many people stay there. In that county that I was telling you about, there are just about 8,300 people. Half of them live in one little town. And the rest are scattered way out. And I was doing some thinking. There's enormous ranches, huge ranches, but only a few cows. And I did some research after I got home, and it appears that it takes between 40 and 50 acres for one cow-calf pair to survive in that land. And I don't know, some of you farmers here could probably tell us how much it is in Missouri. What, 2 to 4 acres? Is that about right? So it's on the order of times 10. Takes 10 times as much land out there or more to support a cow and calf. So I wondered, what would I look like if I could be represented geographically? What do you think you'd look like? Would you be like the empty sand hills, beautiful from a distance, but you want to pass through quickly? You don't want to stay. There's life there, but just barely. You're impressive from a distance, but you're the kind of person that you only have a casual acquaintance with. People only have a casual acquaintance with you. It's hard to support life. It's hard to build a relationship with you. Or would you be like the Missouri Ozarks? Would you be tough and red and rocky? Would you have chiggers and seed ticks and 90% humidity and 104 degrees? But would you also be filled with springs of clear, cold water and lush grass and thick forests filled with all kinds of life? Would you have the sound of cicadas and robins and wrens in your life? Maybe you'd have all these little dips and hollers and ravines filled with interesting but very eccentric people. Is that the kind of person you'd be? Or would you be like the Rocky Mountains, cold and proud and distant, too high to support real life and your rarefied air and your ivory tower? Your roots are down low, but you've forgotten about them. Your pretensions are so high and mighty, you forget that you're supported by what you consider to be beneath you. Would you be like the Sahara? Only blowing sand, scorching days and freezing nights. Only a few camels daring to rush across You're killing distances, heading to small pockets of life, like dots on your map. Would you be a silent land, with only the hiss of the wind-blown sand? Or would you be like a rainforest, reveling in the rain of God's daily blessings, so filled with life that a person could sit at one spot all day and not see all there is to see, not take it all in? Would your trees tower overhead, reaching up to the sun, where their shade cooled everything underneath? Would the air around you be full of the carols of birds and of insects and the songs in the edge of hearing that are there if you stop and listen to them? Or would you be a Serengeti, predator and prey, lions and impalas? What would you be like? It was just something I was pondering as I was driving along there through that vast emptiness. I think very few people are all desert or all rainforest. We all have our times of drought, our times of frost, maybe an experience of tornado now and again. But we all can work with what we have. The amazing thing about creation, God's creation, is that anywhere on earth you can look, whether it's in the bottom of the sea or on the tops of the mountains, and you can find some sort of life. In Antarctica, there are worms that live in the ice. And there is life there. One of the neat things about the sand dunes or the sand hills of Nebraska is that they have a species of plant that is now endangered. This plant is a plant that thrives on sand. And as it's very tough, and it drives its roots down very deep. But as it stops in the sand, it creates a barrier, and the sand begins to stop moving. The dunes begin to solidify and to stabilize. But what happens after that is that other plants start growing up. And these plants can, the seeds of these plants can last decades under the sand until just the right conditions and they spring up. But as they stabilize the sand dunes, other plants start growing up, weaker and more vulnerable plants. And when that happens, they drive out the first plants. And so those plants are now becoming endangered, interestingly enough. There's always hope. There's always a chance for life, no matter where we find ourselves. And sometimes I think we can blame others for our own lacks. Maybe we're a Serengeti or we're a Sahara, and we wonder where are the birds of paradise. We wonder where are the robins in our lives, and we think the robins must be at fault. But we can create, to some degree anyway, that environment that produces life or that is amenable to life. Jesus once told a parable about land and seed and a man who went out to plant his field, and I'd like to turn there. Mark 4, verses 1 through 20. Mark 4, verses 1 through 20. And he began to teach by the seaside, and there was gathered unto him a great multitude, so that he entered into a ship and sat in the sea, and the whole multitude was by the sea on the land. And he taught them many things by parables, and said unto them in his doctrine, Hearken. There went out a sower to sow, and it came to pass, as he sowed, some fell by the wayside, and the fowls of the air came and devoured it up, and some fell on stony ground where it had not much earth, and immediately it sprang up, because it had no depth of earth. But when the sun was up, it was scorched, and because it had no root, it withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked it, and it yielded no fruit. And other fell on good ground, and did yield fruit that sprang up and increased and brought forth, some 30, and some 60, and some 100. And he said unto them, He that hath ears to hear, let him hear. And when he was alone, they that were about him with the 12 asked of him the parable. And he said unto them, Unto you it is given to know the mystery of the kingdom of God, but unto them that are without, all these things are done in parables. That seeing they may see and not perceive, and hearing they may hear and not understand, lest at any time they should be converted and their sins should be forgiven them. There seems to be a bit of a conundrum, doesn't it? Why would Christ teach in such a way that people would not understand? Why would he tell them things, important teachings, knowing that they weren't going to understand them. And I think it comes back once again to our will, doesn't it? People didn't want to understand. The ones who did want to understand, these things were visible to them. People that just wanted to find fault, these things weren't visible. We have to want to follow the Lord. You know, he's there, and his hands are reaching out toward us, and he wants us to follow him, but we've got to respond. And he said unto them, "Know ye not this parable? And how then will ye know all parables?" He says, "The sower soweth the word. And these are they by the wayside, where the word is sown. But when they have heard, Satan cometh immediately, and taketh away the word that was sown in their hearts." What are some ways that we reject truth now? We reject it out of hand. Falls on our wayside. Lies there in the concrete, shrivels up and dies. How do we do that sometimes? What if it comes from somebody you don't like? Or in a way you didn't like to hear? Maybe you've got fertile ground right over here, but this person has access only to the stony part of your heart. Are we ever guilty of that? Of cutting ourselves off from grace by cutting each other off from grace? And these are they likewise which are sown on stony ground, who when they have heard the word, immediately receive it with gladness, and have no root in themselves, and so endure but for a time. Afterward, when affliction or persecution ariseth for the word's sake, immediately they're offended. These come up beautifully, but they're style without substance. The two aren't the same. And you know, so many times we could be good Christians if it wasn't for all the people. But why does the Bible talk about long-suffering? Why does it talk about forbearance and patience? It's because these things are expected. And if we don't have those things in our lives, if we're short-tempered and angry as by nature, maybe we should cast ourselves in here and take a good look at this. We can look just fine as long as there's no trouble. But when the pressure is on, what happens to us? And these are they which are sown among the thorns, such as hear the word, and the cares of this world, and the deceitfulness of riches, and the lusts of other things entering in, choke the word, and it becometh unfruitful. See, deceitfulness of riches, cares of this world, lusts of other things. One thing I think that enters in here, maybe for me, it doesn't say anything here about anything being wrong with the soil. Nothing's wrong with the soil at all. But it's got other things in there. One of those other things, I think, is pride. Pride kills our relationship with the Lord. It kills growth in relationship with Christ. And one of the ways that pride shows up is by choosing not to love somebody. If we ever come to the place where we decide that we choose not to forgive, we choose not to love a person who just is impossible. If we get to that point, that choice spawns a sickness that will spread through our entire system. Bitterness eats away at all of your life. You can't be a person of love except for one thing. If you decide not to love, if you allow bitterness one spot, it begins to color and rot your whole life. It stunts all your joys. It saps all your happinesses. It steals from all your other relationships. Even if you try to ignore it or forget it, it pulls your concentration away from the things that give life, and it makes them disappear into morass of unfocused anger, sense of futility, blackness, eats us. We can't afford to let bitterness sap our relationship with Christ. Verse 20, "These are they which are sown on good ground, such as hear the word and receive it, and bring forth fruit, some 30-fold, some 60, and some 100. Good ground. Got a lot of cars out there in the parking lot this morning. None of them have drivers. They've all got a lot of potential to go a long distance. But potential is not the same as performance. And that is maybe one thing especially to think of as young people. Potential is not the same as performance. And there's a lot of potential there in these front benches. But it's important that you harness that potential and do something with it. Sometimes you hear somebody say, "That's so sad. That person had so much potential, and look what happened to him." Let's look at Luke 12, verses 47 and 48. See what Jesus said about this. Luke 12, verses 47 and 48. "And that servant, which knew his Lord's will, and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomsoever much is given, of him shall much be required. And to whom men have committed much, of him will they ask the more." I think it's safe to say that all of us have been given much. We've been given a huge amount. What are we doing with it? To have potential is to have responsibility. And potential should humble us, not make us proud. We're responsible for this gift that God has given us. To intellect, insight, talent, charisma do not give you an inside track with God. God has told us what he wants. He wants little people. He wants children. People who depend on him, not on themselves. People who seek to lift him up without seeking to show others how high they lifted him up. Look at me. See how much I can lift the Lord up, or how much I have done for him. People for whom it is foreign to dismiss or denigrate another based on his or her evident talent or lack thereof. People who are in the truest sense of the term, disciples of Christ. Isaiah 66 says something about people that were trying to give God a gift. "Thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. Where is the house that ye will build me? And where is the place of my rest? For all those things hath mine hand made, and all those things have been, saith the Lord. But to this man will I look, even to him that is poor and of a contrite spirit, and that trembleth at my word." In 1 Corinthians 3, another situation was happening here, where people were worried about who was getting the praise. And Paul writes very eloquently about this. I'm just going to read 1 Corinthians 3, verses 1 through 11. "And I, brethren, could not speak unto you as unto spiritual, but as unto carnal, even as unto babes in Christ. I fed you with milk and not with meat, for hitherto you were not able to bear it. Neither yet now are you able, for ye are yet carnal. For whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal and walk as men? For while one saith, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, are ye not carnal? Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos? But ministers by whom ye believed, even as the Lord gave to every man. I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. So then, neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God that giveth the increase. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God. Ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's building. According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ." If we were spread out like a map, what would we look like? Let's stand for prayer.